You are listening to the Wells Tech Podcast, where we talk about technology that can serve the church and its work of spreading the gospel. Wells Tech is a part of the Podcast Network on Streams, the internet media site sponsored by the Wisconsin Evangelical Lutheran Synod. Join the conversation by visiting our podcast website at wellstech.wells.net. You're listening to the Wells Tech Podcast for Wednesday, June 29th, 2011. This is episode 190, Wells Hacker, iPads and Mouseless Browsing. Welcome back, everybody, to the Wells Tech Podcast. We are approaching that magic 200 episode mark. We're at 190, Sally. Good morning.
Good morning, Martin. Hard to believe we recorded 190 of these things.
Seems like only yesterday. This was just the twinkle in our eyes. So it's been fun. And every show is a little bit different, which I have fun preparing for. And this series that we're doing this summer, I'm actually enjoying. It's forcing us, I think, to think a little bit systematically about, you know, what would be useful to share, you know, with our listeners, a kind of a step-by-step approach to different experiences we have or different things that we find that help our productivity or good, useful ministry resources, and put it down in writing for time and eternity, and then chit-chat about it. So that's the series that we call Wells Hacker, kind of a takeoff on Life Hacker. And so far, so good.
Yep, I'm actually learning quite a bit from you. I don't know if it's reciprocated.
Oh, absolutely.
There,
yeah, but that's awesome stuff.
Yeah. Always good to learn new tips and tricks and shortcuts. I love that about the Life Hacker blog. And hopefully we're benefiting those in their ministry efforts with our Wells Hacker post in a similar way.
Yep. So your blog this week talked about your family vacation of a couple weeks back where you went up to the UP. And all you took along with you, other than maybe a few changes of clothes, was your iPad. No computer, you know, just the iPad experience. How'd that go?
Well, it was good. It was all good. I was a little bit nervous on the front end of it, but I thought it would be a good opportunity to learn, if nothing else. I was kind of forced to make use of tools that I wasn't real familiar with, since my iPad's pretty new to me. But I really enjoyed the all-in-oneness of having the camera, the video, and the communication device, computer, there in one device. So I've blogged about it. I blogged about some of my apps that I really enjoyed and what I learned about them along the way and some examples of the different output that I got from those apps. So if you're an iPad user or considering an iPad, this might give you a little bit of a feel of kind of the full gamut of what you can do with iPads. I started with photos because that was one reason why I waited on the iPad too. I really wanted an iPad for quite a while, but I wanted to have that camera built in. And for those of you with an iPad too, you'll know right away that the camera is not the beefiest camera that you'll come across. You know, you're going to end up with some graininess to your pictures potentially. I had some really good ones. I had some that weren't quite the quality that maybe I'd hoped for. But right off the bat, I fell in love with Instagram, which is a free photo application, which allows you basically to add some filters to your photos and then save them in this filtered format. And most of the filters make them look like they're maybe from 1970 or so.
So the graininess is not a bad thing.
That's right. It's got a real retro feel. And all of a sudden, you're hip and with it with your grainy photos. And so I had a lot of fun with it. But the surprising thing that I found was that Instagram is a social software as well. So as I'm sharing my photos and things, all of a sudden I realized I had followers, which I didn't even know existed. But it's kind of like a Facebook stream almost, that you get a mashup of all the people that you follow in your Instagram feed. So you see other people's photos mixed in with yours. And it turns out to be a lot of fun to get a little peek into what other people are doing. Lots of vacationers out there, so lots of cool photos of that kind of thing. And even this weekend, I used it at our church picnic and got a picture of my husband preaching the sermon with the Sleepy Eye Lake in the background. And it was a really cool picture that I was able to share on Instagram. So I'm really hooked on Instagram, recommend it highly, and I love the price. It's free, so you can't go wrong there. What I did find, though, was that I wanted to do a little bit of image editing. Mm-hmm. And I tried out several different editors, and I still have several installed, and maybe I'll make use of them for different things. But I really felt like I hit a home run with this image editor called Photogene. It's Photogene. And it only costs $3, but it is very feature rich. You can do all types of image edits. You can add text, and you can even make collages with up to 6 different images in one. And I had a lot of fun building collages of our vacation and just doing all kinds of image editing with Photogene. It allows you to resize your pictures. It allows you to output them to multiple locations, and just a really powerful tool. It took a little bit of work to get up to speed with it, but it was well worth the investment. And I really probably spent more time in Photogene than anything else during the vacation, just playing with the pictures that I took. It was a lot of fun. So
nice.
Moving on, then I talk a little bit about video. I did use iMovie and created a video of our vacation. I also used Apple's Pages, which is their word processing software. It's a good opportunity to learn about how it works. And I kept a vacation diary. And it was really straightforward, easy to use. It outputs to Pages format, which is only on the Mac, but it also will output in PDF and Word format. So there's some versatility there. And I was really happy with my Pages experience. I got real good at typing on the on-screen keyboard.
I was going to ask you, are you a touch typist or are you a hunt and pecker?
I'm pretty much a hunt and pecker. Okay. I try to touch type, but not very well.
Well, it's good because you can't. I bet. I've tried. Yeah. But so that does slow me down because I do touch type. But after a while, and I'm with you, I think you can approach. I don't think you can equal the speed of typing on a regular keyboard, but you wouldn't want to type a novel on there. But for journaling or those kinds of things, emails, I think it's perfectly fine.
Yep. I found that I pretty much locked my screen into landscape keep it landscape quite a bit on the iPad so that I have the wider keyboard. And I did fairly well with it, not bragging or anything.
Yep. And it does predict pretty well. I think the iOS system really does some pretty good correction, even if you miss a keystroke or two.
And finally, just probably one of the biggest challenges I had was blogging for my iPad. I wanted to put out at least one blog post just to say I'd done it. And the big challenge is you can't really upload images the way you normally would on a computer. Mm-hmm. It won't go search your camera roll for the image. So you've got to get that image into your blog software by some other means, either posting it somewhere else and pasting in a URL to it or something else. And what I found was Blogsy will do it for you very easily. It's a blogging software. It costs $5. And for all I'm using it for, uploading images, I don't know if that's the best use of $5 or not. It has other functionality, but I really just used it for the image upload capabilities, and it worked perfectly. You bring up your camera roll or all your albums, drag and drop them into the blog that you want to upload to, and press a button, and they are immediately available there. So in your blog post, you can go into your media gallery and make use of those images.
So it's a separate, it's totally separate process from the blog creation.
Okay. Exactly. So I would edit my images in Photogene and get them down to the right width that I wanted for my blog site. And then I would go into Blogsy and upload them to the media gallery through Blogsy. And then I'd go do my post and make use of the images that were available in my media gallery. So it was a multi-step process, not the smoothest thing in the world for sure. But I did blog from my iPad, so I can tell you it can be done.
Nice.
So,
yep.
Yeah.
I've
just
found,
a little peek into how I use my iPad only.
Yep, I've found that it is a workable solution even for doing presentations and such, so it can be a business companion as well. But there are, if you can live with some of the, of course, limitations. So, but for certainly email, keeping up on email, small, a little bit of content creation, I think perfectly viable solution.
And I love having the camera and video camera. Video camera quality is awesome. The iMovie tool was a lot of fun to work
really,
with.
The video camera basically gets higher marks than the photo camera.
It does. It's very high quality and well done.
Interesting.
So I did learn a little bit about the video process. If you move the video to your local computer and delete it from your camera roll, you can't access video from anywhere but your camera roll. So you can like in the iMovie process and things like that for sharing, you really need to keep your videos kind of local there where they were recorded. Once you move them off of there, you can't put them back.
Okay.
It's kind of a lock thing. So there was a learning process there
Live
too.
And learn, yep.
It's all good. I'm making progress.
So you do it again.
Oh, yeah. Okay. And I do it again because this thing is lightweight and thin. And
yeah.
I'm not carrying around
the purse
a heavy
or
laptop.
Whatever. Yeah.
Exactly.
Okay.
So, it's all good.
All right. My blog post this week was entitled Browsing with the Keyboard. I start off the blog post talk kind of reminiscing about the good old days, the DOS days, when you actually had no mouse. Everything was on the keyboard. You remember those days, Sally, don't you?
Back in the day, I sure do. Wasn't that long ago.
I remember working along in WordPerfect, the character-based WordPerfect, where you just had to, know all the keyboard commands and your arrow keys and whatever, and you were fine. In fact, you were probably quicker at content creation back then than we are now, because your fingers never left the keyboard. Now, with all the web apps and Web 2.0 and using the browser for everything, the mouse is an indispensable tool. It really is, because there's just certain things you can't do without the mouse. But the point of my blog post is you can, I think, improve your productivity by trying to use the mouse less and use the keyboard where it makes sense. And where it makes most sense in your browsing experience is with keyboard shortcuts. And I highlight my five favorite, at least for Internet Explorer, and I give links for the other, three major browsers, Safari, Chrome, and Firefox. But there are some keyboard commands that I use on a very regular basis that I think do save time, and they're fairly intuitive. So I can probably go through those real quickly since there's only five of them. One that I use all the time is the backspace key. Who'd have thunk that you could use the backspace key while you're in a browser, but basically it's the back button. A lot of us do use the back button to go back to the previous page we were viewing. We clicked on a link that didn't net the results we wanted, and we wanted to go back. So you can navigate with your mouse up to the upper left and hit that left arrow button and go back, or you can just quickly hit that backspace key and you're right back to where you are, and you can keep hitting that and continue to go back in history. So that's one that I use at the top of the list. Sally,
I have to interject there that I love that when some of the windows open up with no controls on them. So you don't have a back button. Maybe you're filling out a form or something and you end up in the wrong spot and you really wish you could go back, but there's no back button. The backspace key has come to my rescue in those situations.
Yeah. When they hide the all the toolbars at the top, you really have no option but to use keyboard shortcuts at that point, and the backspace key does
it
for you. Yep, absolutely. Mm-hmm. My second one is one for those who have failing vision, like myself, that Control Plus, Control Minus, or Control Zero keys really come in handy. And I think this works on almost every browser the same way, where you hit Control and the Plus key and it'll zoom in by 10%. So it enlarges everything on your screen for a little bit better viewing, especially when you're working in a laptop mode and you got a little bit smaller screen. It really helps to beef that up a little bit. And then to get back to where you started, just hit Control Zero and you're back to 100%. So use that all the time. Another one, the next two are related to tab browsing. Almost all the modern browsers use tabs. I know Chrome does, Firefox, Internet Explorer, Safari. They all have tabs, so you can have multiple windows open at a time. But to force a new link or a link that you're clicking on to open in a new tab is pretty easy as well. Just hit the Control key and then click, and it opens up in that new tab. The fourth tip is kind of related. Now that you've got a bunch of tabs open, instead of navigating with your mouse up to the top and clicking on the tab that you want to view, you can cycle through them, similar to the Alt, tab function on Windows or command tab on the Mac to cycle through open applications. You can cycle through open tabs with the control tab key, so you can go right through them. And that's really helpful because a lot of the things that you and I do, Sally, and I think most people who are on the web running these applications, whether it's YouVersion or Picnic or Gmail or whatever it is, to have to constantly go back to tabs with the mouse is time consuming. Just hitting that control tab key will cycle through each window that's open, each tab that's open. And then the last one is kind of a presentation trick, and I use this all the time as well, and that's the function 11 key, and that just basically takes your browser full screen. So you got all the screen real estate used up by your browser, and that's important with some of these applications now today too. When you're viewing it in a laptop, you want to get that zoomed out because that's really the only thing you're looking at. It doesn't make any sense to have one window over another if your primary work is going on within the browser. Why not go full screen and get rid and also it gets rid of the tabs at the top and the URL bar, the address bar at the top, and just gives you a very clean, almost application-like experience, which is kind of the goal of Web 2.0 is to give you that application within a browser without making you think you're in a browser. So those are just some tips that I found very helpful and use all the time, and hopefully you will too.
And I'm here doing a live test, folks, on Google Chrome, and all those work just fine in Google Chrome as well. You Sweet. Said they were Internet Explorer, but
yep.
but they work in Chrome too. So if
yeah,
you're
some
a
of those
Chrome
are,
user,
are industry standards, mm-hmm. but there are many others, and there are some links there to some other shortcuts that may give you a little productivity browser boost as well. So hope you
talking about tab browsing, Martin, I found an iPad app, a new browser called iChromie.
Yep.
I don't know if you've downloaded that
mm-hmm.
one yet.
I've tried that.
But it does allow for tab browsing on the iPad. Mm-hmm. So if you're looking for that functionality there, try out iChromie. I think it's by Digo, actually.
Yep. Digo made that, which is kind of interesting because they're basically a bookmarking tagging mm-hmm. company. For them to create a browser seems a little bit odd, but it does obviously interface nicely with their Digo application, which both you and I use.
Right. I'm hoping that that I can make use easier of my Digo links through iChromie. Mm-hmm. So I have to play with that some more.
Yep. I'm imagining a lot of new browsers coming out for these mobile devices. There are a bunch of them out now. Opera has one. I think Firefox has one. I don't think Chrome has one, and the name iChromie is a little bit deceiving because it's not by Google or Google mm-hmm. Chrome. It's not a stripped down version of that. So I would think that those are going to start appearing as well. And some even do Flash, which is nice for some of the websites. So good stuff.
Right. Only gets better and better.
It does.
All right. Time for community feedback. And first up, we heard from Dave Voss. Dave is out in California. I can't remember exactly where, but I know he's a California guy. And he sent us an email saying that he had a wish list for his website that volunteers could go there and sign up and indicate what they were going to be bringing, for instance, if there was a need to sign up for specific items. And then the website would be updated so that everybody could see an up-to-date list of the things that are still needed from volunteers. And I was able to point Dave to volunteerspot.com because I know that through that website, which is a separate thing, you could sign up for an account there and do that exact kind of thing with their interface. And it'll send reminder emails. It has lots of functionality there at volunteerspot.com. Mm-hmm. So may not be exactly integrated with your website, but I haven't done it. They may have ways to actually embed it in your own website as well.
Yep.
So check that out as a solution for volunteer sign-up needs.
I think that's a growing need within congregations, the ability to get volunteers going via an online form of some sort. This seems like a good tool for that.
Okay. Next up, we heard from Dave Hupp, who is was alerting us to the fact that the Wisconsin State Legislature was voting to abolish WISCNET, WISCNET, which is basically an ISP that many school districts take advantage of to have affordable internet access. And through some of their budgeting, things, they're looking at abolishing that. So Dave actually has a blog post out there explaining it, and with links to different information about that legislation that's being looked at. So if that's something that might affect your school, it's just good to know that they're looking at defunding that. So you may need to look for a different internet service provider if you're a WISNet user.
Yeah, and just a little promo for our ShopWells program. We do have a service through our partner DVI Consulting that will actually look at your internet service providers and find the one that is ideal, you know, for your particular situation and price point. So go to shopwells.net to get hooked up with them, and they can do a review if you're in this situation. Probably not a bad thing to do on a regular basis anyway.
Next up, we heard from Pastor Fred Goldberg, who wrote asking about RefTagger. Pastor Goldberg had implemented RefTagger, which it turns out is a Logos product, mm-hmm. For making easy-to-embed pop-up Bible references available on your blog, for instance. And he was hoping to be able to implement it maybe in his Google Docs as well. So he was asking if we had any resources about RefTagger. I am not familiar with implementing it on Google Docs. It's not something that I would be knowledgeable about. But I did find some community forums and things on the Logos site where he could ask that question. Mainly wanted to make mention of it here on the show, Martin, so that other people may make use of the plugin for RefTagger on their blogs or websites. So yep. There's quite a bit of documentation out there. Looks like it's pretty easy to implement. And the interface is really nice. You can specify which version of the Bible you'd like to pop up. And basically, when you type a Bible reference, it will automatically add the link. And if your users even just hover over the Bible reference, the complete Bible verse pops up and is viewable there for them. And then they can click to get to the entire Bible and see that verse in context and that kind of thing. So it's like a handy plugin.
Yeah, absolutely. It's something that we use on Wells.net and works extremely well and just makes it super simple to make these passages just kind of load right in line, so you just hover over the passage and up pops the verse, and you can easily click a little more link that'll take you to the site, and you can read the verse in context from biblia.com and in, like you say, in whatever version you want. So very cool tool. If you're not using it, it's really easy to implement. So
just makes the word more available to your site users, so that's a good thing. So.
Yep.
All right, next up, a shout out to missionary Paul Nitz, who serves in Malawi, Africa. Pastor Nitz wrote us and said that he's getting ready to be on furlough. Actually, I think he's attending the LWMS convention as one of his starting points of his furlough. And he indicated that he's doing his deposition presentation this year using Prezi. Martin, that's one of your favorite tools.
Mm-hmm.
Prezi's a different way to do presentations, definitely not your grandma's PowerPoint mm-hmm. type of tool. And I would be very excited if you have the opportunity to see Pastor Nitz present on Africa. I'd encourage you to do it, and I think you'll be in for a real treat because he's using Prezi.com for that presentation.
Yeah, if you're not familiar with Prezi, it's a different concept or paradigm for presentations. It's one big slide, and essentially you build a path or a route through all of the components that you put on that slide. And different views of different components on the slide make up your presentation. So it's a little bit different way of doing it, but whenever I've used it, I've had a lot of people ask, you know, what is that? How do you do that? Because it does add kind of a little different angle, and I think, at least for now, keeps the viewers a little bit more interested in the presentation itself.
Very good. Lastly, a couple of DIGO links shared by you and I, Martin, I believe. The first one is called Fiesta, and it's an article that you tagged from Lifehacker about creating group email list.
Yeah, there. I got to bring up the article. When did I do this? I must have been on vacation doing this. there are lots of email group lists. You can use something like Google Groups or whatever. But this seems really simple, where you just create an email alias for a group of contacts that you have. And this is just, that's all it does. And it allows you to create the group like Wells members or Peace members at fiesta.cc. And then whenever you send an email to that particular group, there's an interface online that allows you to add members to the group. Then it just simply distributes it, and that's essentially all it does. And people can, anybody can send email to it and share that email with anybody on the list. So fiesta.cc is the email, is the web address.
Sounds like an easy enough tool to use. Mm-hmm. So, the one that I shared was called freewebpageheaders.com. How's that for a catchy name?
Yeah.
And it is exactly what it says it is. It's a website where you can download beautiful imagery that you can make use of on your webpage. I was really impressed with their gallery of images. It covers all different types of images that you might want to make use of. They have food and drink, they have nature, they have just technology stuff, they have kind of digital art and abstract things like liquids and shapes and lights, and just would make really good background imagery for a header area on a blog or a website. And all of it is licensed for non-commercial use. They just ask that you give them attribution for the source of the webpage header. And I think you'll be really impressed with the imagery you find there. Most of it is sized at 800 by 200. So if that works, otherwise you could probably make some edits to it. I believe it allows for remixing, so you could overlay text or however you'd want to make use of the imagery available there. Freewebpageheaders.com.
Very good. That's it for the show this week. Next week, Sally, you've already got your blog post all mapped out. I have no idea what I'm doing, so it'll be chef's surprise next week. But you're going to talk about Digo lists, which I'm a big fan of as well, so I'm looking forward to hearing your insights on Digo lists. Very useful.
Yes, definitely.
Let's close the show with the music of Revelation. Agnus Dei is the name of the song from their album More Than Conquerors. Thanks, everybody, for joining us. Please tune in next week.